So, dear Ian, what shall the Italian fans expect from the Jethro Tull 50th anniversary shows next March?
Well, they will see some, to begin with, in chronological order for much of the show. They will see the earliest days of Jethro Tull from our beginnings at the Marquee Club in 1968, and they get to meet some of the musicians who've played with us over the years on the screen behind me. There have been 36 members of Jethro Tull during 50 years, and so a few of those will pop up along the way, along with a few other special guests who will appear briefly on the screen. And we have a little journey through the early decade, I suppose, when Jethro Tull was becoming well known throughout the world, and so that's the period of time when Jethro Tull became an internationally successful band. And mostly I focus on that first period of the late 60s through to the through to the end of the 70s.
What do you remember about playing in Italy back in the 70s?
I remember the piano being out of tune. I remember riots and tear gas and delays and bad organization from the promoters, who didn't really understand or perhaps really care about detail. So it was hard work. The audiences were very enthusiastic and very supportive, but the organization, the practical issues of traveling and doing concerts, was really not good at all. So unfortunately, 2 hours on stage, you have to compare with another 22 hours in the day when things were not so good. So you know, it wasn't a very enjoyable experience back then.
Yeah, hard times.
Well, it wasn't just us. I mean, Italy, and particularly one promoter back then, who I won't bother to mention the name of, was notorious amongst all the British bands as being, you know, really very, very difficult to work with. And so it was always very, very hard work. And in Germany, for example, everything was fine. Everything was well organized, and in Switzerland, and even in France. Yeah. But it was really a tough time in Italy, and it took a few years before Italian promoters began to become more professional and realize that they had to do as good a job as promoters in other parts of the world. And that is the case, although I have had some recent problems, but it's always going to happen somewhere. But it wasn't easy. So I have a lot of early memories of Italy that were not enjoyable. But then once we got into the 80s, things began to be much better, and we had a lot of great experiences of playing in many parts of Italy that I've been fortunate to perform in, and even including recently a couple of Italian churches at Christmas last year.
What can you tell us about The Ballad of Jethro Tull, the first official Jethro Tull book? What shall the fans find in it?
I have absolutely no idea, because I'm not writing it. I'm very much in conjunction with the writer and the publishers, responsible for finding a lot of information and arranging for past band members to do interviews. And I will read it with interest and see if it is a good reflection of the Jethro Tull story. It's written by someone whose work I have read, and so I approved him as a writer because I knew that he had a very good, objective and accurate, well-researched way of putting these things together. And there have been some other Jethro Tull books which basically they're just copy and paste. They just take things they found on the internet, copy them and paste them into a book as if they're facts. And of course there are lots of things out there that are completely wrong, either historically or voicing opinions or telling stories which are absolutely untrue. And when people just copy and paste and don't research the authenticity of what they find on the internet, then those failures continue to replicate. But Mark Blake, who's the writer, he's just released a book about Peter Grant in the Led Zeppelin days, their manager, and before that he did a book on The Who, the early years of The Who, and he's written, for a number of British rock and pop and music magazines and newspapers for many years. So he's a very knowledgeable guy. I'm confident he will tell the story the way it should be.
The String Quartet is an album recorded by you with the Carducci Quartet, arranged and orchestrated by John O'Hara. What can you tell us about the recording of it? It's been done in two churches, am I right?
Yes, it was recorded in the Worcester Cathedral, mm-hmm. one of our big medieval cathedrals, in September of 2017. And we also recorded in a little tiny little church in the middle of the countryside, complete opposite of a cathedral, a tiny, tiny little church that was probably the size of, the average family apartment, and, a historic ancient church. And it wasn't really because of acoustics. People assume that I wanted to do it because of the acoustics. It wasn't that at all. The acoustics are actually something you have to fight, because you're trying to get a clean recording that doesn't have all the complications of the acoustic identity, which is sometimes can be quite unpleasant in buildings that weren't designed for a neutral acoustic ambient sound. So it was really more to do with the spiritual side of the atmosphere that I wanted the musicians to make part of their performance, to do it in a way that was, a little reverential in a way, because they were dealing with music that was written in some cases before they were born.
A couple of years ago, you've been recommending the band Edensong. Which music are you listening to when you're not busy with your music?
Well, often I'm listening to music that is by artists who've asked me to play on a track on their album or whatever. So mostly when I sit down to really listen to music, it's something that I'm unfamiliar with and I have to learn and really try to understand and get a good feel for their music to be able to add something as a musician which is complementary to their music. So that maybe could be anything from a heavy metal band to a punk artist to a classical artist to a jazz artist, or I just fit in a few each year. But when I'm listening to music in a more relaxed and recreational way, it's usually classical music, and usually on an airplane, because I'm sitting, I'm not a happy flyer, I get a little nervous, so I find that listening to relaxing classical music is a way of just calming me down when I have a long, bumpy flight through thunderstorms.
And what shall we expect in the future? Some new recordings by Ian Anderson or Jethro Tull?
Well, either or. I haven't really decided. And it's, I have 7 tracks that are not yet finished, but that we recorded some months back. And hopefully I get a chance to do that during this February and again in May, and so I'm hoping to have that released towards the end of this year. And I'm also working on a lyric book, the compiled lyrics, some 250 songs that have been part of my life for the last 50 years, and that's illustrated with photographs, which I will take from my personal collection of photographs. And there's another project, I can't remember what it was. Oh, yes, I have yet another project as well, but that one I think I'll keep quiet because that won't be before 2020. So I have plenty to keep me busy as a musician and as a writer between now and the next few years. And I also have in mind that I will write a biography, which is, won't just be about me and my personal story. It will be a little broader than that, but again, the way in which I want to write that autobiography will be, very much a part of the what I would hope would make it unique to me. It's not something that somebody else could write, so I have to write that myself, and I'll probably write that over a period of time in 2020 and 2021. But, you know, I have plenty to keep me busy, and that's important at my age, to have lots of good work to do and to be energetic and enthusiastic and enjoying my life.
Outside music, in Italy we've got some amazing Indian restaurants. Which are your advices for the Indian food novices?
Well, the Indian restaurants in Italy are relatively new, because it was only a few years ago. I you could hardly find an Indian restaurant anywhere, maybe in Rome, perhaps in Bologna there was one. But it's now become much more of a common part of the restaurant scene in big cities. And of course Japanese food is huge. There's sushi bar around every corner. So things have become much more cosmopolitan. And it used to just be, I mean, it was Italian restaurants or it was Chinese restaurants. And now you have many other forms of restaurants to choose from, and including, of course, vegetarian and vegan restaurants. So there's something for everybody these days, and that's a good thing. But I would never direct anybody to any particular restaurant, simply because I may have been there and enjoyed it, but maybe I just went there on a good day. And also chose the right things from the menu. And of course, somebody else might go to the same restaurant and have a terrible experience. So it's a bit like me saying, "Oh, you must go and watch this movie that's going to be in the Academy Awards this year," because you might watch the movie and hate it, and I might watch the movie and have thought it was great, you know, or a book. Or a piece of music. So I don't really like to recommend things to people who would be disappointed. So if I recommend something, it tends, you know, I will say, maybe, you know, check this out. It's worth listening to, because there's some connection. Like if it's a band who are doing a cover of a Jethro Tull song, or it's a band that I think deserves some support. But I'm very careful about, you know, the fact that it won't necessarily appeal to other people, just as other more ethical subjects like conservation or issues of animal rights or climate change. These are some things that, you know, a lot of our fans would disagree with me over. And so I have to accept that, you know, you can't expect people to be persuaded just because they might like your music, which is why publicly I keep out of politics. Especially I keep out of American politics, because I'm not an American and I need my American visa, so I have to be careful not to upset Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and the presidents of a few other countries, who, if they were to read in the papers some adverse criticism, would perhaps decide to cancel my visa. So, you know, we have to be pragmatic. I wouldn't want to disappoint thousands of fans because I lost my American visa by saying something that perhaps as a musician is not for me to say.
We also know that you are very fond of cats. Which are your thoughts about such adorable creatures?
When I was a little boy, I had a cat. It was the first animal that shared our home, and I always felt attached to cats. More than dogs. I prefer cats, and so all of my life I've had cats, and they are part of the family. And today I get two more cats, because my son is dropping off his two cats for us to look after for a day and a night while he's in London. So, and sometimes when my daughter goes away, she brings her cat, and we have to look after him for a couple of days or a week. So our house is usually has quite a few cats looking for food and somewhere private to sleep, which is usually they attempt to get upstairs so they can sleep on our bed. So that's always a bit tricky, because if more than one of them gets to do that, they fight, very territorial. But yes, I love cats, and I'm also concerned a lot about small wild cats in various countries that are under threat and whose future is very much in doubt. even more so because of climate change and the inevitability of a huge amount of damage to a number of species on planet Earth. Perhaps one third of the species on planet Earth will be severely impacted by the end of this century, we're told. And of course, the species that will probably be impacted the most is Homo sapiens. So take note.
Yeah, definitely. Memento. So one final message, greeting and invitation to the Italian fans of Jethro Tull waiting for you in Brescia.
Well, they could expect to, I hope, enjoy 2 hours of interesting and sometimes nostalgic music. But it's just always nice to see Italian faces smiling, and I hope that they really enjoy the concert. We look forward to seeing them there, and I invite them to leave their mobile phones at home, or at least keep them in their pocket, because I find it increasingly annoying when people flash their cameras at me and spend the night not listening nor watching the music, but trying to record a video. It just, you know, I wish people would use their eyes and their ears and their memories. It's so much more enjoyable than spending the night with a phone that annoys not only me, but it annoys the people sitting around them, you know, to have a lit-up screen, flashing and facing them all the time. So please keep your phone in the pocket. That would be nice. I thank you very much for being kind enough to do that.